The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are really got a great one for you today. He's been with us several times before, and I am really interested in what he has to say about what's going on here. We are pleased to have with us Keith Fitzgerald. Keith is Chief Investment Strategist for Money Map Press, and I've got a question for him when he first comes on. Keith, are you there?
I sure am. Good morning, and thanks for having me back.
Oh, no. Thank you for being on. Okay, now I've got this question for you because I saw this documentary last night. Scared me to death. You go back and forth to Japan all the time.
He's going next week.
Yep. I'm going next week. That's right.
And I don't know if you've seen this documentary, but apparently the most dangerous creature in Japan, and it's now spreading, is a giant hornet.
I have seen those things, and they're pretty big, and they're not nice.
Yeah, they can just one bite, one sting can kill an average man.
I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of creepy crawlies over there.
Yeah, no, they said that that it kills more people in Japan than all the shark deaths around the world.
Well, it's funny because I thought you were going to mention the Prime Minister of Japan, you know, for his failed economic policy. But
we'll get that in a minute. It's just that I saw this show on Horn. I'm sorry. This is kind of the National Geographic minute. I saw this program on hornets and how they're now spreading into China and they're into France and they've got no enemy.
Well, that's as I understand it. They have no natural predator, and
right.
You know, so the risk, of course, is not only humans, but there's also some concern, as I understand it from scientists, there's also some concerns as to how this will handle, you know, the crops and the plants, because
right.
Obviously, you know, pollination and weeding out, you know, bees that you do want, for example,
right.
Pollen-carrying things. So there's actually some serious agricultural concerns as a result of these things.
Oh, yeah, and what's part of it is the fact that their nests primarily are underground.
So, exactly. You know, very hard to find.
Very hard to find, and the guy that finds it usually is dead.
Exactly. Technical problem with that.
All right, so it's not so I just have to ask, it's not an issue over there? I mean, is it something that they're talking about a lot over there? Because the program I saw just really was a little disconcerting, to be honest with you.
Go ahead, Peggy.
No, I was just going to say this sounds like a job for Mothra. So I see a new movie in the
movie. Oh, no, this is amazing. These things are huge.
They're not small.
Yeah, all right. All right, I'll get off of it. I was just a little bit concerned. I'll ask him more questions during the break. All right, I've got to ask, what do you think comes next? Obviously, I was a little discouraged this morning because I thought for sure that when I flipped on CNBC, which I watch as I'm getting ready, they'd be talking about something else. And lo and behold, when I flipped it on, the underlying word said, let's talk about the rate hike here. You know, they got their rate hike, and now they want to talk about when they're going to get their next rate hike. When do you think we're going to get the next rate hike?
You know, we've seen this script for so long, and the Fed has ignored reality for so long that it's very hard to say. You know, Yellen should have raised rates 18 months ago. She finally raised them now. And by absolute pure luck of the draw, she didn't crater the markets. I think that she's becoming more sophisticated in terms of her use of language. She understands finally that the Fed has a very serious cheerleader's role right now in the modern world economy, and that it actually has very little in terms of monetary input. So traders, if you look at futures, for example, are still pricing in a 30-40% probability of a 50% decline like we saw in 2008 into the futures markets. So they've got a heck of a job on their hands. They've got to convince people that this is not going to be a one-and-done situation, that the economy is really strong, and that they can raise rates repeatedly over the course of the next year or two without absolutely devastating things. And, you know, that remains to be seen as to whether or not they're going to be able to pull that off.
Do you think rates are going to go up on the consistent basis that we're hearing? We had Sam Stovall on from S&P Capital earlier in the week, and what his prediction was once a quarter for the next four quarters. So he was looking at rates being essentially 1.25% higher than they were the day before yesterday by this time next year.
Well, Sam's a very smart guy, and I have a lot of respect for him and for his work. I think that that's absolutely possible. Whether or not Yellen will stick to it, I don't know. The two whammies for me are the geopolitical situation and then also the terrorist situation. I think the data in terms of our earnings is not as good as the Fed believes, and the Fed's ignoring that. And the danger is that if they go too far too fast now, that they, in fact, do slip us back into a recession. So once a quarter, I don't know. I think maybe once in 6 months would be more my speed.
Right.
But then again, you never say never with the Fed.
Yeah, that would be more my that's more my thoughts exactly about maybe once in the next 6 months. But now, and now you mentioned something that concerns me is that it doesn't seem like the data, particularly in manufacturing, would be that supportive of this. I realize that if you looked at labor, it depends on how you look at labor. That's kind of, labor is one of those things. It's kind of like a crystal. It just depends on which facet that you look at. Some look prettier than others, but it does not seem like that, you know, yeah, we're the prettiest girl at the dance, but it's really an ugly dance, and things are not that robust out there.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because the thing that I repeatedly come back to is, where's middle America in all this? And, you know, we can be an economic bull yet a market bear, or vice versa. You know, and I think right now the situation that concerns me most is that household wealth is still on the decline. Wages are flat. We have the smallest workforce participation in recorded history right now, if I'm not mistaken. So the numbers continue to go better, but those are the numbers the Fed looks at in complete, you know, ignorance of the rest of what's happening. So my concern is that they're going to raise rates, and my theory is that they're raising them on the assumption they're going to have to lower them in late 2016 or early 2017. And, you know, that's sort of a dangerous thought.
Yeah, that is. You're the first person I've heard say that they're going to raise them. They have to bring them back down again. Is that one reason they're raising them? Do you think that there's some indication, or there some knowledge on their part that scenario may play out? Obviously, there was some concern earlier this year expressed that we might be going into a deflationary environment. That doesn't seem to have played out. But obviously, one of the best tools for fighting deflation, if you can, is to reduce interest rates. And obviously, you can't do that if you're at zero interest rate policy. So is one of the reasons they're doing this to maybe prepare themselves in the future for the responsibility of reducing rates again?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, normally I'm not into conspiracies. Normally I'm not a member of the tinfoil hat club. But, you know, I do believe that there is something else going on here. I believe the Fed knows and has known for a long time that the data is worse than it's letting on. And so I think very deliberately that's exactly what they're doing. And you've never seen, there hasn't, to my knowledge, ever been anybody else out there talking about this. But that wouldn't change the fact that I think they know that the situation is far worse and far more treacherous than they're letting on.
No, you're absolutely a cutting-edge interview this morning, Keith, because nobody's been talking about what you've been talking about. Very interesting. I hope you'll stay with us for a few moments. I've got some other questions to ask, and I will start out the right way next time. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. I'll be back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today Keith Fitzgerald. Keith, a chief investment strategist for Money Map Press. And Keith, how can the folks, because you've got all kinds of things. You're the editor of two trading services, the Geiger Index and Strike Force. You have a weekly missive called Total Wealth. I guess the Total Wealth is still free, is it not correct?
Total Wealth is still free, and we have, God, good grief. I think we have several hundred thousand people, and we're honored to have a large Total Wealth research family. Please join the party. It's a lot of fun. We have one of the great things about Total Wealth is that it's not just the Keith show. I mean, you know, I lead the band, but everybody in the audience, everybody who is a member of the Total Wealth family, is free to contribute. So we have lots of contribution back and forth. We have members helping members, readers talking about the issues of the day, and it's a great place to learn. If you're a new investor, you can pick up great ideas. You can learn from more experienced people. If you're an experienced investor, it's a great place to get a fresh perspective. And so there's lots of interchange of information. That's what makes it so valuable.
Yeah, and you're kind of like a really good seeking alpha. You know, where everybody kind of...
Thank you for that. I don't know. You know, I put my shoes on just like everybody else does. The difference is I've got 34 years of experience doing this, and hopefully we'll get a lot more right than we get wrong.
No. Your shoes are smarter than most people, Keith. So let's.
You're very kind. I don't know.
All right, let's talk. I guess instead of talking about Hornets last time, but I just couldn't get over it. And one of our listeners has sent me a picture of a Hornet. A picture of a Hornet that's bigger than these things are bigger than quarters, folks. So Abenomics, not working so good.
You know, but again, you know, this is the danger: is you've got the avarice associated with monetary manipulation, the presumption that somehow they're going to bail themselves out of this. Well, you know, last time I checked, you can't spend your way out of recession that was caused by too much money in the first place. It won't work in Japan. It won't work here. Now, failure may take 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, the Roman Empire took 400 years to fail. So incompetence takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. In the meantime, you got to find the opportunity, because there is always opportunity. As negative as that seems and as poor as that is, you know, the Japanese exporters have been doing very, very well because they are the princelings. They're the ones the Japanese economy wants to support. Here in the United States, the bull market is not dead, for example. You know, Yellen's misses, bad as they may be from an economic standpoint, you know, the right companies will always continue to pull ahead. We saw a 30% performance gap, Mike, between the best and worst segments of the S&P 500 in 2015. I think that's going to be even more graphic in 2016. And when you consider that earnings in the best segments are still going to go up by 8%, seems to me there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So what's your prognosis on Japan? Good place to invest or not?
Well, if you're investing in shorting the currency, which they have to have in order to be successful, I think that's a good opportunity. I think if you're investing in major exporters, that's a good opportunity. But the domestic market consumption is almost non-existent, so that's a
right.
Very tough place to be right now.
Yeah, demographically, it's a tough country. They're going through some real pains,
real
they're not growing pains, they're aging pains over there in Japan.
Very much so. Worst demographics on the planet.
Yeah. Coming back on this side of the pond, one of my concerns is that if you look at some of the P.E. ratios of some of the bigger players like GE, for instance, you know, these things are already in their 20s. And with manufacturing slowing down, that doesn't seem to bode well for the stock market next year. What are you looking for in the market next year?
Well, let me float an idea by you here. So I think the markets are going to do 8% next year. It's not all going to be in a straight line.
Wow.
So they're going to be up and down, but I think you're going to have the opportunity, if you do it right, to hit that 8% number next year, which is good. But you think you've got to be very, very careful. You've got to have the right companies. It's good companies and bad markets is kind of the operating theory in 2016 for me.
Okay.
And if you're looking at traditional manufacturing companies, I would argue that high PEs are definitely a problem, because you're going to either have to lower price or raise earnings to bring those ratios back in the line. On the other hand, if you're looking at companies that are tech companies, for example, or medical supply companies, which may have a moderate PE, but they've got technology that is truly growing at double or even triple digit rates, there you've got an impact on the PE that's real and measurable. It's not like making another widget and selling it to a person. It's making a widget and selling it to 1 million people, to 2 million people. It's leverage. And it's not financial leverage. It's leverage in products. And those companies, not coincidentally, might have got pricing power. So despite the fact that the Fed's raising rates, despite the fact that it's becoming more expensive to do business, they've got products, for example, like Apple, that will literally change the face of the planet. Those are the kinds of companies that are very attractive to me in 2016 and potentially 2017 as well.
Okay, so you're staying away from a lot of the more traditional manufacturing companies. Any other segments that you like around the world? It seems like a lot of our guests and a lot of what I'm reading and seeing in the popular press is that the United States may not be the best place to play anyway, that Europe looks more enticing.
You know, I've seen that a lot, too. I have a hard time with that one. Emerging markets are priced at sort of a 50% discount right now to the United States. Europe is not quite that deep. But, you know, the situation in Europe is very much in flux. They have an economic migrant situation, courtesy of the war in the Middle East, that is unprecedented in human history. I think that's going to impact margins significantly. So there's good companies in Europe, but most of those companies that I would buy in Europe, for example, are not doing business in Europe. They're doing business in the emerging markets or in the United States. So, you know, I'm looking at the best horse in the glue factory, and that's pretty much going to be the United States or companies that are domiciled here with global spending.
Okay. Is there anything out there that really concerns you? Everybody's, you know, kind of passing around the champagne today and kind of doing the happy dance. And so for the at least for the last week or so, nobody's, you know, you're afraid to mention anything that's of concern out there. As an investor and as a person that advises investors, is there something out there that concerns you that could trip us up next year?
Well, you know, number one, the Fed is always a concern to me because I don't think the Fed has had a grip on reality for a long, long time. Now, that having been said, you know, my job as chief investment strategist is not necessarily to take one position or another. My job is to help people navigate the world no matter what happens next.
Right.
And so every, you know, in that vein of thought, every crisis is an opportunity. I see three big ones right now. Number one, I see the need for technology. So that's an area of extreme interest to me. I see the war, terrorism, and ugliness, unfortunately, growing in sophistication and violence. That is a logical opportunity for defense stocks. And I see certain kinds of medical technology because our demographics, as this world gets more and more complicated and more populated, single-use medical supplies, for example, are going to be in increasing demand. So to me, this is all about being simple, sticking with quality companies, sticking with companies that have pricing power, and companies that make products that the world cannot live without. Right now, those three areas, they can't be without.
Okay. I've only got a minute to go. I'd like your comments on oil, if you would, because a lot of our listeners work for oil companies, and, of course, the economies in which we broadcast generally are based on oil.
Well, this I tell you what, my comments are going to be tough. However, there's going to be an opportunity in here. I think oil ultimately drops into the mid-20s before we get a rebate on the selling pressure. And that's going to be catastrophic for highly leveraged oil companies that have gone overboard. However, as capitalism usually proves, the weaker players are going to get bred out, and some of the stronger players are going to emerge, and that's going to see another fresh round of capital and a fresh round of opportunity.
I don't know what hit me harder, either that or the Hornets. Anyway, thanks, Keith. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.